Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah Emes, which is Chayei Olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah of Truth, meaning a Torah that we can seek to understand things and to make sense of things, and that's how we're supposed to live our life. It's a Chayei Olam. The understanding the values of Torah is supposed to set us up for an approach to how to make sense of the world around us. So, whether, why, and how a Ben Torah should celebrate Yom HaTzmaut. Should I? Shouldn't I? What is there to celebrate? And how should I go about it?
Also, why did other people not...
Right. Because I think many of us live with this illusion that that all of the real Gedolim were anti-Zionist. And there are a lot of big problems with it. So what I'd love to do is take a look at what some of the kashas are. The truth is far more nuanced. The truth is that this is a davar shenachlik ubo gadoli olam. I mentioned to you this morning that nowadays we don't get very worked up about wearing tefillah, not wearing tefillah chalmoid. You walk the shuls, you know there are Jews that wear tefillah in the chalmoid. There are Jews that don't wear tefillah chalmoid. And so in our communities, people are pretty calm about it. Eretz Yisrael, sometimes people get very passionate about it. Our community in America, people tend to be very relaxed about it. Some people do, some people don't. No big deal. Live and let live. Live and let live. What do you mean? Our mitzvah say daraisa. If you hold that you should be wearing tefillah chalmoid, full disclosure, I personally do not wear tefillah chalmoid. If you hold that you should wear tefillah chalmoid, so you look at a Jew who does it, mamash, he's being mevatel mitzvah daraisa 2 weeks a year. 4% of the year. That's pretty serious. But we say, no, machlokas, yeshomrim. As we were discussing the other day, the Rambam explains in the Hakdamot Tepirish Mishnah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to organize and present Torah to us in a way that machlokas is inevitable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't put everything in the Torah Shebichzav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to divide the Torah between Bichzav and Baal Peh, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu further decided that not all the Torah Shebaal Peh would be delivered directly to Moshe Rabbeinu. We'd have to figure it out. Such that machlokas is inevitable. That's the way Rabbi Shlomo set up the Torah. That was his choice, and that's a davar pashtas. Of course, it's machlokas. Yesham like this, yesham like that. Right? Some hold you should wear tefillah, some hold you shouldn't wear tefillah. It's a very significant issue. And elu ve'elu, fine. You hold this shita, I hold that shita, and that makes sense to us. Now the truth is, if you go back to the period of the Gran de Balatanya, people did get very, very, very passionate about this issue. They say that the Haflah, Pinchas HaLevi Horowitz, who was a Hasidish Talmud Chacham, who was a Rav in Germany, of a Yekesha community, he was a Talmud Magid of Mezrich. The Haflah was a Talmud Magid of Mezrich. He took a Rabbanus position in Germany. They were not interested in Hasidus. He had, they tell that the Haflah had a special pair of tefillin for Chalmoid. He had two pairs of tefillin. One pair of tefillin he wore all year long, another tefillin was only for Chalmoid. And he took them very seriously. They're very special for Chalmoid. No one ever allowed to touch them. No, he was makbid, the Haflah was makbid, Hakpa de Gemara. No one was ever allowed to touch his Chalmoid tefillin. Now, the Haflah's children grew up not really knowing. His son never really knew. He knew his father had like tremendous hakpadas about the Chalmoid tefillin. He never really knew why. He was always curious. But it was a subject that wasn't for discussion, and definitely not for touching. And after the father passed away, he took his father's tefillin to a sofer. And the sofer opened up the Chalmoid tefillin and discovered they were empty. There were no parshas inside at all. Why? Because he was Talmud Magid of Mezrich. He didn't want to wear tefillin Chalmoid. But that would not have that would not fly in the Kila at all. That would have been a lightning rod issue. So he bought himself a pair of batim that were empty. So Lamara Sa'ayin, he was wearing tefillin, but in truth, he was not wearing tefillin. But he didn't want Chalila, someone to think the real tefillin, is going to put them on, thinking that he's wearing tefillin on a different day of the year, Rahman al-Tzad. So the Haflah's solution was to get the second pair of tefillin that weren't really tefillin, they were empty batim, and to create this hakpad that no one would ever touch them, that way he wasn't worried that anyone would ever put them on, thinking that they were going to be yotze with the fake tefillin. I mentioned that to give you a sense We look at Tefillin Chol Hamoed as a non-issue, a machlokes, but not something that people get worked up about. That wasn't always the case. But in principle, that's the way it should be. It's a machlokes. Yesh over the yesh over the rice lekan, rice lekan. That's the way halacha works. Where mishnayos alone have thousands of machlokes in. So there's no reason to assume there shouldn't be machlokes in yani hashkafa. The same as machlokas in Yani Halacha, and that machlokas in Yani Ashkafa between Great Tanei Chachamim should be rooted in not just in shooting from the hip, but in tochen of learning. The same way you have machlokas in, then you have machlokas in Halacha. Now the truth is, if you go back to the Wayu Library, actually has the copies of the records of the various Knesios Gedolos of the Aguda. The Aguda did these world conventions even before World War II. The last one they did before World War II, if I remember correctly, it was the sixth Knesios Gedola, was in Marienbad, 1937-1938, in the shadow of the growing power of Nazi Germany. And they described the way it opened with Tefillin, opened the convention with Tehillim. People were crying. It was clear there were tzaras were coming. It was clear people tzaras were coming. And then they took up the matter of the day, and the one of the major topics of discussion was about the partition plan. At that point, the League of Nations was suggesting that we should take Eretz Yisrael, which had been part of the British Mandate since the end of World War I. And it should be divided, part go to the Jews and part go to the Arabs. So there was a major discussion at the Marienbad Convention of the Agud in the late 30s, was should we accept the partition plan or not? There were three shitas. The third shita, which was barely represented, a very small minority, it said, no, Chalila, we can't have any Medina in Eretz Yisrael until Bias HaMashiach. That's kfira in the 12th Animam. It's kfira in Emunas HaMashiach to have a secular Medina. Awesome. That was a position. That was the smallest position at the convention. The two major positions were the position of Menachem Zemba on the Gdolei Poland, who said, Chas v'shalom, how could you give away half of Eretz Yisrael? And he was banging on the shender at the Aguda convention. Absolutely, Yisr Gamer to accept such a... If they were to ask the Aguda, what do you think we should do? I don't know if anyone actually asked the Aguda. But if they were to ask the Aguda, what's our shita? Nachem Zeman said, Chas v'shalom, we can't accept anything. We can't give away a part of Eretz Yisrael. Entire Eretz Yisrael ought to be under Jewish sovereignty. And the other major position was you're not giving away. Right now you have zero. They're offering you half a loaf. We're not giving away. They're offering you half. So you can take half. You're not asking for them to take away. You can take what they're offering. And again, those are the vast majority of the Rabbanim and the Aguda assume Pasha we're going to have a Medina. And the Shaila is, are you allowed to have a Medina that only has half of Eretz Yisrael? Or you're only allowed to have a Medina that has... Or is it usher to establish less than everything? That was the Madubra. And there was, a small third minority position that said, no, usher to have a Medina. Now the Hungarian Rabbanim, at that point, the Aguda was basically the Polish Rabbanim and the Litvish Rabbanim and the Yekas. The Hungarian Rabbanim didn't come to that convention because they knew they would be outvoted. Because the Hungarian Rabbanim, mostly Satmar and Papa and Minkach is over, they talk and felt that the Yisr Gamer to have a Jewish state before Bias HaMashiach, and they realized that, well, we'll talk in a moment about the basis for that position. So they knew they would be outvoted, they didn't even show up. The two main proponents of that third position who did show were two Litvish Rabbanim, small in number, but they ended up having an outsized, unusually strong impact after the war. They were Rav Elchanan Wasserman and Rav Aaron Cutler. Or at that point it was Rav Aaron Kletzker. So they were both Baalei Shita that Issachar. But they were certainly entitled to their position, but they were nowhere near the robe. And that's not even Rabbanim Mizrahi. That's Rabbanim of the Aguda. Rav Elchanan and Aaron Kotler were in the minority. I have in my hands, I'm glad to pass it around, the second volume of Rav Nachum Mendel Kasher's Hatzkufa HaGedola, that he published after the Six Day War, after 67. They published a very, very extensive treatment of all the kashas and the rice and back and forth, and Makoros from here, Makoros from there, Gemaras, Midrashim, very, very, very heavy with Maror Mekayimus. The beginning of the second volume, in the second volume is a collection of different fascinating things. He reprinted what the Talmidei HaGra wrote, the Toras HaGra on Geula, called the Kol HaTar, as a lot that's relevant to what we're going to be talking about today and tomorrow. At the beginning of the second volume, he reprinted Kol Kores that had gone out in 49, in advance of the first full election, voting for Knesset membership. Letters that were signed by hundreds of Rabbanim encouraging religious Jews to vote. So he has two letters here. The second letter is by Chassid Sherevis. There's three letters, actually. How many? A number of letters encouraging people to vote. Now, the first letter, signed by hundreds of Rabbanim, opens by saying, Nodel Hashem al shezachinu berov rachamav v'chasadav l'roses hanitzanim harishonim shal haschalta de geula. We give gratitude to Rebbe Shalom that we're seeing in Hakamas HaMedina, the beginning of the process of Gula HaSalat, the Gula Im Hakamas HaShem Medina Yisrael. They go on to say that this, we have to have Hadot to Rebbe Shalom, and we have to take, where we have to participate in voting so that we can have, make an impact, so that the Medina will be as aligned as possible with Ratzon Hashem, with Torah Mitzvahs. And this letter that leads with a clear statement that the Hakamas HaMedina was Aschalta de Geula is signed by hundreds of Rabbanim. Some of the names you might recognize include Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Chatzkel Sarna of Chevron Yeshiva, Rav Gershon Lapidus, Rav Zalman Sirotskin, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and on and on and on and on. So the notion that all, quote-unquote, all of the real Gedolim held that it's Aser to have a Medina, so that is... that is just not accurate. There was machlokas, and there were a variety of positions. And then let's get in a little bit into tochen, then we'll take some questions. Let's get into some of the tochen. And I want to particularly address, what I'd love to do over the course of today and tomorrow, is to address some of the kashas against, to address, and then to move on to understand from a Torah perspective, What is there to celebrate about? Is there anything to celebrate at the Medina? Does the Gemara have anything to say about Medina itself? Does the Gemara have anything to say about Jewish history of the last 150 years? And then, once we work out those two pieces, then we can talk about practically what one approach to what and how and why a Jew should be acting on Yom HaTzmaut, and even when Yom HaTzmaut is. Let's begin with the kashas, and then we'll talk about makoros, and then we'll talk about hanhagas. In terms of the kashas, so one big kasha, and I apologize, I realize I passed around Maror Mekayimus, but I left that one in the central Maror Mekayimus. My mistake. Gemara in Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, the end of Masechus Ksubas, is the sugya of Chivas Aretz, the sugya of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and love of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara there describes the way that Amoron would come to Eretz Yisrael, they would get down and kiss the soul of Eretz Yisrael, based on the Tukim described that, and Amoron did that when I was a kid. I'm dating myself. When I was a kid, we still used to do that. As a kid, Ben Gurion was more rustic, shall we say, and they, when the plane would land in Ben Gurion, they would wheel over the steps, and you went down the steps, and you were on the tarmac. And I remember people would get off that plane and kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. Now it's sort of you land and you're just going in the gate. It doesn't really have that same. By the time you get outside with your luggage to the sidewalk in front of Ben Gurion, it's not doesn't have the same. That's not quite the same impact. But that's what the Amoraim did. That's what the Nevi'im described. Kiratzu avadechas avaneha, and afara yichonanu. The Mishnah there talks about it. It's in Ksubas, because the Mishnah talks about, the Ksubas is largely about figuring out how to negotiate differences, when there are differences between husband and wife, what are their reciprocal rights and obligations. In an ideal situation, all the technicalities are relevant because the husband and wife have good communication, they figure things out together. Sometimes people don't have great communications, and the network of rules and regulations are there to catch people when communication is not great. So the Mishnah discusses, let's say one member of the couple wants to move, one member of the couple wants to stay put. So how do you figure that out? Again, ideally, you discuss it and you figure it out together. But if that unfortunately is not the case, so what are the rights of a spouse to stay or to move? And then the Mishnah says, it's staying in Paris versus moving to London is not the same as staying in Paris versus moving to Eretz Yisrael. And staying in Tveria versus moving to Tzfat is not the same as staying in Tveria versus moving to Yerushalayim. And that law, that comment to the Mishnah about the unique value of moving to Eretz Yisrael launches the Gemara into this whole discussion of Chivas Haaretz and Yishon Eretz Yisrael. And then, on Kuf Yud Alfam and Aleph, the Gemara says the following. Based on the Psukim, and Shir Hashirim, Hishbati Eschem Benos Yerushalayim. The Pesukim speak repeatedly in Shir Hashirim about the Shavua that's being imposed. Hishbati Eschem. I am imposing a Shavua on you. So Gemara has a comment that Rabbi Shalom imposed various Shavuas on Klal Yisrael, various Shavuas on the Umos HaOlam. Umos HaOlam shouldn't over oppress us. So Yishtab would be Yisrael Yosim Yidai. It shouldn't overly oppress the Jews. And a shavu on Kalal Yisrael, shalo yalu b'choma. We should not make aliyah as a choma, as a wall. Not to force our way in. Against the wishes of the Umos HaOlam. Against the wishes of the nations of the world. So that Shavuah was quoted by the Sakhla Rebbe and others. They said, look, it's Beferish HaGemar, Ksubas Kifid Alvam and Alv, Shol Yal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed their Shavuah and Klal Yisrael, Shol Yal L'Bachoma. We don't have the right, we're not allowed to force an Aliyah to take over against the wishes of Umos HaOlam. It's Beferish HaGemar. Beferish HaGemar. So, there's nothing to talk about. Hakamas HaMedina is Aser. It's a violation of the Gimel Shavuos. So, the three Shavuos. It's a violation of that one of the Gimel Shavuos. Now, number one, the one good question to ask is that, do we paskin like that? I got it. It's not quoted by any of the poskim. The Rif doesn't quote it, the Ram doesn't quote it, the Rush doesn't quote it, and so forth. There's a Megillus Esther. The Megillus Esther, the Achron, Megillus Esther, wrote a running commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs. So when the Ramban attacks the Rambam for not counting the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and the Ramban at the end of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, all the mitzvahs I say that he thinks the Rambam didn't count but should have, so mitzvah hey, I believe, is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Ramban says mitzvah deraisa. Rambam never counted. So how come the Rambam didn't count? The Megillus Esther always has a teretz to every one of the Ramban's kashas. The Rabbi Nichols has to write, you know why the Rambam didn't count it? Because there's no such mitzvah as that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because of the Gemara Ksubas Kuf Yud Alfam and Aleph, Shol Yal L'Bachoma. Aser! That was the position of the Nichols Esther. So the Stam Rabbah quotes the Halakha Nichols Esther, quotes the Gemara Ksubas. Okay, so that's the approach of Nichols Esther. It is not, however, quoted by the Rif, or the Rambam, or the Rush, or any of the other post among the Rishonim. Number one. Number two, there were those who argued that maybe the Shavuos are a package deal. The Shavuos for Umos HaOlam and Shavuos for Kalal Yisrael. If the Umos HaOlam violate their end of the deal, Shol Yishtab Du B'Yisrael Yosem Yidai, after the Holocaust, they violated their side of the deal. So maybe it's a contract. And the Kalal Yisrael's Shavuos is not binding either. Okay. Also, an interesting point. Again, inconclusive. The Rishonim don't quote the Gemara, but it is the Gemara. It's an Agadata. How do you figure out to what extent you apply Agadata al Halacha? It's unclear. The argument that once Umos HaOlam violate their end of the deal, so we can violate our end of the deal? Maybe. Okay. Svar l'kan, inconclusive. What's far more conclusive is the comment of speaking about the real Gedolim, pre-war Gedolim, the Ar Sameach, a Litvak and a Chassid, the Ar Sameach, Mer Simcha of Dvinsk, and the Shem Yishmuel, the second Sachat Shavu Rebbe, the son of the Abinezer, the grandson of the Kutzker, both made the same point. I think it's more famous in the words of the Meshach Chachma. Meshach Chachma wrote in a letter that he said there was an event after which Sar Pachad HaShvuos. After this event, we're no longer worried about those Shvuos. What was the event? So Eretz Yisrael for hundreds of years had been under the little bit of history. For hundreds of years, Eretz Yisrael had been part of the Ottoman Empire. The Turks had an empire that stretched across a significant chunk of the Middle East and Europe and beyond, and that included Eretz Yisrael. What we call the old city of Yerushalayim, not that old. Those walls, that doesn't go back to the Bayis Rishon, even the Bayis Sheni. Those walls go back to one of the Suleimans, one of the sultans. For a couple hundred years ago, one of the Turkish sultans, Ottoman sultans, had built a wall around Yerushalayim. The Turks were in control of Eretz Yisrael for hundreds of years, up until World War I. They were on the losing end of World War I. They were allied with the Germans, and they lost. And when they lost World War I, a part of the Treaty of Versailles was that to the winners come the spoils, and the British and the French divided up much of what had been Ottoman Middle East. So that became divided between the British and the French, and Eretz Yisrael was part of the British Chelek, part of the British mandate. And another thing that happened in the aftermath of World War I, Woodrow Wilson was the president of the United States at the time. Different historians have different approaches, different perspectives of Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson was very taken by the notion that if we could get together an international body that would bring together all nations, that would solve the problem of war. We could achieve world peace if we could get everyone to communicate. So the British and French, I think most historians assume the British and French were not really so interested in the idea, but they threw a bone to Woodrow Wilson. They said, we'll give you the League of Nations if you allow us to have our way with Germany, with the losing side. So Woodrow Wilson got his League of Nations. If you study the history of the League of Nations, it was started after World War I in order to achieve enduring world peace. Within less than two decades, World War II has begun. And if you go into the history of the League of Nations in greater detail, there was plenty of smaller wars and conflicts going on throughout the world. The League of Nations involved itself in, generally without any effectiveness whatsoever. The League of Nations certainly did not prevent World War II. If anything, one might argue, some historians would argue, it caused World War II because the creation of the League of Nations was, as I mentioned before, in return for the Wilson agreeing to the way the British and the French wanted to punish Germany. And some historians would argue that they punished Germany so severely, they destabilized it so much that they led that contributed to the rise of Hitler in World War II. The League of Nations seems to have accomplished precious little, except for one thing, which is that you learn Ksubas, Gemara Rashi, and you hear, you can't have we're not allowed to return to Eretz Yisrael in an organized fashion against the will of the Umos HaOlam. What does it even mean, the will of the Umos HaOlam? How would the Umos HaOlam even express their will? I mean, Umos HaOlam live all over the Olam, all across the world. How would you ever have any mouthpiece for what the Umos HaOlam was? It was almost unthinkable until, after World War I, there was actually an organization that was meant to represent the Umos HaOlam, the League of Nations. And it accomplished almost nothing except for the following: for giving permission to the Jewish people to reestablish a national homeland and national sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. The British issued a Balfour Declaration. Well, Balfour issued a declaration that Her Majesty used with favor the notion of reestablishing a Jewish national homeland in Eretz Yisrael, right, giving the Jewish people sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. And at the convention of the League, when the League of Nations met at San Remo, they accepted that, they confirmed that declaration. The League of Nations signed on that the Jewish people have the right to reestablish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the League of Nations did very little except for the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Messiah, the Hashkacha saw to it that there would be an opportunity for the first time in world history for all the Ummah HaOlam to express their wishes. And they expressed that the Klal Yisrael have the right to reestablish themselves in Eretz Yisrael. And after that, the Or Sameach wrote in a letter, says, from San Remo and on, Sar Pachad HaShavuos. Now no longer worry about the Shavuos. Even if you think the Shavuos are binding, but now this is no longer Bechol. The Ummah HaOlam gave permission. They gave permission then. They gave permission again on the 29th of November 1947. So that's the Pashtus, is that even if we could debate whether or not the Shavuos were ever binding Al Pidin, but as our Sameach pointed out, as the Sachat Shavuot, the Shem Shmuel pointed out, that after San Remo, Sar Pachad HaShavuos, the League of Nations accomplished, that is no longer a concern. Question? Yeah, please. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it at the right moment that this would be in place.
Doesn't it make more sense
that the Orthodox talked about almost
all in the sense of some, you know, other
national or governmental policy that would make sense? So you're saying maybe this means one nation. As soon as the British gave permission, that was already enough. You didn't need legal nations. Could be. Whichever Ummah happens to be in charge. Certainly possible. The same was like Koresh gave permission that wasn't for sovereignty, he gave permission to the Jews to return. He didn't consult with any other emperor. Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yehuda was part of the Persian Empire, and he was in charge and he made the rules. It could be. But even if you assume it was almost more broadly, and it's remarkable. It's remarkable that the whole concept didn't even, it was unimaginable, and then when it was time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that the pieces were in place. The other major kasha is the question of how could it be hayitachin that Rabbeinu Shlom would, you tell me this is HaKamas HaMedina is a positive, you tell me HaKamas HaMedina was sent by Rabbeinu Shlom at the very least as the Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, and perhaps even as those hundreds of Gedolei Yisrael signed in 1949, not only Yeshua, but the beginning of the process of Geula. How yitachin that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would send Yeshua and Geula through Jews, the vast majority of Jews involved in the Zionist project were, at best, not Shomri Mitzvah. At worst, violently anti-Torah Mitzvahs. They were, let's call a spade a spade. The majority of Zionists were non-religious. I'm not sure that's true any longer. But pre-state, certainly, in the early years of the state, the majority of Zionist Jews were either non-religious or anti-religious. It's certainly true that many Jews saw this as a replacement. There were Apikursmen who saw this as a replacement for Torah Mitzvahs. Let's rebuild a new Jewish identity around Israel and Zionism rather than Torah Mitzvahs. Just like there were groups who wanted to rebuild Jewish identity around socialism, the Bund. There were Jews who wanted to rebuild Jewish identity around Yiddish. They were Yiddishists who wanted to create a secular Yiddish culture. There was a secular Yiddish culture. There were Yiddish plays and Yiddish novels. And I had a professor in college who was a Yiddishist. He would email with his wife in Yiddish. Not religious. There were Jews who were looking to replace Torah Mitzvahs with something else. And there were Jews for whom Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael, was that something else. So there were religious Zionists, there were Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer and the Tziv and so on and so forth. But most Zionist priests they were definitely non-religious or worse, anti-religious. So you might say, how are you talking? How could it be? Well, if this is really Meis Hashem Haisazos, it would be coming through tzaddikim. It wouldn't be coming through Jews who are so far even anti. It's a very good kasha. And there are many ways to look at it. But the simplest, in the next 90 seconds, is to just look at a pasuk in Sefer Melachim. There are Mendel Kasher, and Tkuf HaGadola points you to. In Melachim Beis Perek Yudalad, the end of Perek Yudalad, Yeravam the second. One of the Malchi Yisrael was there. The first of the Malchi Yisrael was Yeravam ben Nevat, a great Rasha, a terrible, terrible Rasha. Later on, we come to another king named Yeravam, Yeravam ben Yoash. Here it is, in the 15th year of the reign of Amatziah Melech Yehuda, Yeravam ben Yoash becomes the Melech Yisrael. For 41 years, the first thing we hear about, Vayas Hara Be'ini Hashem, a terrible Rasha, Lo Sar Mikol Chatzis Rav Ben Nevat, Shehechti Yis Yisrael. He was a Chodei Umachti, he encouraged like practically all the Malchi Yisrael, he encouraged the further development of Avodah Zarah among the Jews of his kingdom. Terrible Chotei Machti, terrible Avarya. And then, the Psu can go on to say, Hu Heshiv is Gvul Yisrael, Milvav Chamas Ad Gav HaArava. He restored, he moved out the, he retook parts of Eretz Yisrael that had been captured. Why? Ki Ra Hashem Es Ani Yisrael Morem Ma'od. Bo Hashem saw that Klal Yisrael were so downtrodden. Ephes Azur, Ephes Azur, Ein Oz of Yisrael. Because both didn't want Klal Yisrael to be destroyed. Vayoshiein, B'yad Yeravam Ben Yoash. Pasuk says, Kadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael through the, in the hands of this Rasha Merusha. Chotei Umachti, over the Avodah Zarah, King Yeravam. He was, Kadosh Baruch Hu was Moshiach Klal Yisrael through him. Says the Radak, why is the Pasuk saying Pasuk Chavav? Hashem saw how we were downtrodden. Says the Radak, you know what that means? Lo b'shvil tshuva sha'asa. Wasn't it Klal Yisrael did tshuva? Klal Yisrael, he was a Rasha and they were Rishon. They're all over the Avodah Zarah. El Sharichem Aleim, Kira Anyam, Kadosh Baruch Hu Rachmanos, despite the fact that we were Rishon. And the Tandav Eliyahu, the Medrash Tandav Eliyahu, goes on to say, what's with this Yeravam? Hello, you Yeravam over to Avodah Zarah. He was a terrible chote. So why was he Zochet to be the vehicle for Kadosh Baruch Hu's Yeshua? El Shlo Kibel Hashem Hara, Amos Hanavi. He had once done a mitzvah, a significant mitzvah, Ben Amachadero. He respected Amos Hanavi, wasn't Makabal Hashem. For that, he was Zochet to be by Yoshiyim. Kadosh Baruch Hu was Moshiach Yisrael at the hands of Yeravam ben Yoash. So certainly, is it true that we would be happier if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sent Yeshua through all through great tzaddikim? Sure. And the Radak perhaps indicates, maybe if we would have been Zocha, if Kadosh would have been on a higher level, we could have been Zocha to Yeshua coming through tzaddikim. But to say that it can't be Yeshua from Ribono Shalom because it came beyond the Chotei Ramachti, that's just not true. Because you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does send. This is one of the greatest Yeshuas of the entire period of the hundreds of years of the Bayis Rishon period. One of the greatest Yeshuas come, the Kadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis, and he saved us through Melech Yisrael, who was a terrible Rasha. So would we be happier otherwise? Sure, we'd be happy otherwise. But is it a Kasha? Nishkan Kasha. So we address two of the Kashas, the Kasha of the Gemara in Ksubas Kupyidav, the Gimel Shavuos, and the question of Misnora, how could it be that Yeshua's Hashem could come through people who are not Yirei Hashem, to put it mildly. So we address those two kashas. Mitzvah tomorrow, we'll pick up with on the positive side. What is the value? We start just by addressing on the kashas. We want to get into, we will discover that Kadosh Baruch Hu has been crying for this for thousands of years. We'll discover that the Gemara Sanhedrin addresses Nevuahs that we have seen directly. It sees them of great significance. There's a beautiful Arach Chaim in Parshas Balak, who addresses the possibility of a political process, natural political process, leading it being the initial steps towards Geula Shlema. Mitzvah, we will continue with this tomorrow.